from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll check out the Athenaeum's Rain Garden.
I'll chat with cabaret singer Shannon Forsell.
And I'll find out why the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir is going to perform Brahms' Requiem in China. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more, right after the latest news from NPR. Downtown's most distinct historic buildings, the Athenaeum, is about to embark on a 21st century upgrade, a rain garden. Sharon Gamble invited the Athenaeum Foundation's Cassie Stockamp to tell us what a rain garden is, why you might want to consider adding one to your home, and about some other upcoming volunteer opportunities at the A.
We should start with the definition. What is a rain garden?
Good question, Sharon. A rain garden is literally a garden where rain for stormwater has been diverted. And it has been planted with plants that are more succulent and that they have an ability to absorb more moisture. And underneath it, there was also typically are layers of either a combination of more permeous soils and gravel so that the water, if there's any balance of the water that hasn't been absorbed by the plants, it will slowly percolate down and remain in the ground versus being driven off by a storm pipe and going into the sewer line, into the storm sewer line.
So this is about as green a situation of gardening as you can imagine.
It is. It's a wonderful concept. So we'll be taking our two downspouts that come off the building, diverting it into this. It'll actually have a slight indentation, a pond-like indentation there, so it will collect some of the water, again, allow it to evaporate as well as be absorbed. And then there will be probably some runoff if you have heavy rain experiences, and it will go into the storm sewer. But, no, it's something that not only commercial properties, but individual residents can do as well. So we just want this to be a public place where people can see and ask those kind of questions. What is a rain garden?
Yeah, and use it as a model for people to come study.
Exactly.
Tell us where adjacent to the building this will be.
Sure, and it's going to be right up front. So the green space between the Raskeller entrance and the Y entrance, there's just some turf there right now. That's what will be dug out and replanted with these different plants. And we'll also be putting benches in to make it more user-friendly.
Cool.
And just, again, more aesthetically appealing, user-friendly, and an educational model there.
Where did this idea come from?
Oh, rain gardens have been around for a while. I have a bit of a green background. I started all the environmental programs for the city of Fort Wayne years ago. And
really?
Yeah, that was fun. All the recycling, composting, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I actually have a beehive, but that's a whole other conversation.
Beekeeping at the Athenaeum to be announced in the future. I can see it now.
Oh, goodness. So this when KIB came out with their it's been out for several years, but after I'd been here and thought, my goodness, this is a perfect opportunity not only for us to start becoming green, but also it's not real pretty in front of our building right now. How do we beautify it? How do we make it a landscape project as well? So it was a win-win on many levels.
And in fact, you know, I was having a conversation before you came into the studio with a colleague who knows the building and your property fairly well and said, where on earth would they put that? And I think we all walk by or drive by that green space, and
we don't even notice it
because it's very modest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what sorts of plants might we find?
Ooh, specifically, I'm going to have to defer on that and say I'd have to get back with you. We're working with a landscape architect, and there are some specific plant lines that should be included because they're more absorbent, and I can't tell you that.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's part of why we're encouraging people to volunteer to be a part of this project
and
to learn more.
Yeah, as well as when they're helping to plant, and also permanently we'll have markers there as to what the plants are in the name so that we can all become more
sure.
user-friendly, so to speak.
Obviously, it's going to have to be resistant to gas fumes and to, because mm-hmm. you've got some pretty mm-hmm. heavy traffic that comes across.
We sure do.
Michigan
and
there.
This has been an interesting project because actually the footprint of our building is literally just the footprint of the building. Everything beyond the border is the city right away. So we're having to
You're
work.
Kidding.
No, isn't that fascinating? So that was something I learned too after we came here. So we've had to go through a series of easements and encroachment processes. But in addition to working with Historic Preservation Commission as well as the Parks Department for a flora and fauna permit, so they are also reviewing and looking at these plants to make sure they're drought resistant and fume resistant and urban tolerant.
Yeah.
So yeah,
cool.
It's been an interesting process.
bureaucracy.
It's been fascinating. Well, let me share. It has been interesting. We really had anticipated putting this planting in last fall. However, the city asked us to stop so they could use this as a demonstration project because they had not, this was the first time something like this had been done in their easement and in their right-of-way. And so they used this as an opportunity to put together all their internal processes and paperwork so that this could be a model for future projects.
Wow.
So that was a nice win-win. So we'll be, again, getting some publicity not only for us, for KIB, but through the city and saying, hey, contractors, landscape architects, we now have a better flow, a better system. They're going to be able to access this information on a website and see basically a Gantt chart. If yes, then go here. If no, then go here. So we can all be more succinctly looked at and analyzed.
So what is the timeline? I know you have some volunteer opportunities coming up in April.
We sure do. Starting on April the 16th, for the next 2 weeks, basically the Friday-Saturday combination, we're going to be doing everything from pulling out pavers to putting in new pavers to planting, actually putting the plants in the ground, just anything labor-intensive. We'll have a contractor on site to actually do we'll have to put a liner in and do some work with some sewer lines or some storm lines, something like that. But there's going to be physical work that we would love to have volunteers for. So all day on Friday the 16th, all day on, or not all day, but from 9 to 1 on both of those days, on Friday the 16th and Saturday the 17th, and then the following Friday-Saturday combination, the 23rd, 24th, again from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And people don't necessarily need to have any kind of gardening background
No.
or any kind of special training.
No, absolutely not. This will be pretty self-explaining, but we will have people there obviously directing traffic and as well as directing the volunteers as to where they need to be, how deep the plants need to be planted, how do you put brick pavers in place, and they'll be screening different things. So, yeah, it should be very user-friendly.
Yeah, what a treat. I know you have a lot of other volunteer opportunities at the Athenaeum as well. What else do you use volunteers for?
You know, interesting. And also on that first Saturday, April 17th, we actually once a year do a big spring clean, and we use volunteers. We come through, clean windows, we clean corners. I mean, isn't that funny? It takes a community to run this old building. We have to raise money every year just to keep the doors open. And consequently, we use volunteers in a larger amount of capacity than any other commercial building, I would probably say, in the community. So
it's a big building. How many square feet?
It's 94,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. There's nooks and crannies. So on that day, again, people will be doing raking leaves around on the outside, just starting to spruce up for the landscaping. Interior-wise, again, cleaning windows, dusting, some painting projects.
Somehow it's more fun when it's not your own home.
You know, and it is fun. I have to laugh. Last year, we had board members there. We go and drink beers, you know, afterwards in the beer garden, so that's obviously another wonderful hook. But there's just a sense of camaraderie there. That building, it takes a village. And there's such a soul to it, and it is really a unique place. I feel really blessed to be part of it.
Do you have a favorite part of your building?
Oh, the roof.
Really? Why?
It's right outside my office, and if I'm having a moment, do you ever have a moment, Sharon?
Never. Yes, of course.
Literally, it's just a place where you're surrounded by the city, but you're totally alone. Hmm. And you get the long view, and I can just do whatever is needed to get back into that good place.
Short of jumping.
Exactly. And you can look down over a full beer garden, and people don't even see you up there for some reason. It's just you are completely alone, yet still surrounded by life. It's just an interesting experience. So that's my favorite. Now, Jim's favorite place, what he might say, there's a catwalk over the Cabaret Theater, which it was really
people
fascinating.
Was up there?
Well, we all have on occasion.
I've looked at it from the ground and thought, I never want to go there.
You have to go up and over and down and duck, and I mean, it's just really an interesting
Jim
scramble.
Jim Gould seems like such a sensible person. He's your operations.
He's the guru. I don't know what we would do without Jim.
Yeah.
And you were asking about volunteer. I would be remiss in not reminding everyone. We have a variety of heritage events, which really celebrate the German-American activities in the community. And Jim organizes a ton of volunteers for each of those events, everything from St. Nicholas Fest to Kinder Carnival to St. Bueno Fest, and we can always use volunteers for all those activities.
It just occurs to me that maybe not everyone connects the name Athenaeum with a German heritage, so
you.
I should ask
you
to
good question.
Explain.
The building was originally named Das Deutsche Haus, the German house. But in 1917, because of all the war efforts in World War I, there was pretty enough public pressure that the name was changed to the Athenaeum. All of that German heritage went underground. People were ashamed of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the repercussions. So actually, we had a huge conversation the last couple of years about, do we change the name? Do we go back to Das Deutsche Haus? But I think Das Deutsche Haus is probably as difficult to spell as the Athenaeum.
And it's been Athenaeum significantly longer than it has.
Exactly. We have gone through a new branding effort, Meet Me at the A.
Yeah.
And that really is our new tagline. We're trying to get people. We want it to be more contemporary and current, yet at the same time still be respectful of that history, because it is so important for all this. So thank you for asking that question.
What are and you've been with the A for a little while now. What are your goals, or what is your vision? What do you want to? I know you have a lot of things you've been able to check off your checklist so far. But what are some of your pet projects for the future?
Pet projects for the future. Sustainability is obviously always one for this old building. How do we make it a model that financially sustains itself? And we are getting closer. So how do you increase income stream, decrease expenses? And I'm really trying to divert it from a donor-based building, meaning we have to have donations to keep the building open.
Yeah.
Now, that is on an annual operating basis. There's so much deferred maintenance that's good. In fact, we just completed a building assessment that we have a $6 to $7 million price tag depending on the wish list. But what really needs to be done to bring that building back up to the beauty that it should be represented. So from that perspective, in a year or two, we'll depending on the economy, clearly,
sure.
Doing some kind of a capital campaign to start towards those renovations. And everyone recognizes that this building is a treasure, and we hope that people will send that $25, $50, $100, whatever size check to help sustain it and to create that legacy for the future.
There's an association for everything. Is there an association that the Athenaeum is a member of that has counterparts in other cities?
That's so interesting you ask that. Not that I've been able to see. You know, when you Google Athenaeum, there are a lot of Athenaeum buildings around the country, but they're not necessarily German heritage. So there are, in Milwaukee, we went to see there was another, the Turners were the founders of our building as mm-hmm. around the country, which is, again, the German, the sound mind and the sound body, the founding principles of the building. So it's a loose group of communication that goes on, but there's no... of the buildings themselves, there's no association. In fact, we even talked about doing that here locally. How do you share contractors? How do you share best practices? Because these buildings take a different kind of level of care and maintenance than a new building.
And you can't just look in the phone book and find the right contractor to do your roof,
exactly.
For example, or to
the roof or
restore
the
stained glass
windows. And we do have to also work closely with historic landmarks to make sure that who we're using is approved by them. So there are just a few other hoops that we have to jump through.
Sharon Gamble with Cassie Stockamp of the Athenaeum Foundation. There are chances to volunteer to help build the Rain Garden coming up on April 16th, 17th, 23rd, and the 24th. To find out more about the A, the Rain Garden, and volunteer opportunities, visit AthenaeumFoundation.com. Okay, I'll spell it for you. AthenaeumFoundation.com. AthenaeumFoundation.com. Or you can just call 633-2755. Again, 633-2755.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. It's sophisticated. It's swanky. It's so New York. It's Cabaret at the Columbia Club. Up close and personal, today's cabaret performances in the Crystal Terrace take place exactly where Hoagy Carmichael played piano in the 1920s. Travis DiNicola spoke with the cabaret's director and singer, Shannon Forsell, about their upcoming season.
You know, the last time I saw you, there have been some changes. It is now the cabaret at the Columbia Club. This is what has come out of what was American Cabaret Theater. There's been some name changes. Oh, a few location changes
right.
as well. you've gone from the Athenaeum, the Connoisseurs Club. You've settled down at the Columbia. You've actually been at the Columbia for a number of months now.
Yes, we moved into the Columbia Club in December, and we had our Christmas show there, and then we've had two shows since then, and so we're really kind of getting settled in to our home, and we're just loving it, and I'm happy that I won't be moving for a very long time, hopefully.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Now, when you took over as the director of the Cabaret Theater, and there is an official name change now, correct? Is that right?
Well, we're still the American Cabaret Theater, Inc., but we are doing business as the Cabaret.
So it's a DBA
yes.
doing it as Cabaret at the Columbia Club.
Right.
I've seen a lot of your materials and such. Your website is actually thecabaret, right?
Yes.
.com?
Mm-hmm.
Or .org?
.org.
.org. So the organization's gone through a lot of changes. Of course, you know, a lot of people used to know it doing the musical reviews and such at the Athenaeum. When you took it over, I mean, just to sort of recap here, I know that your vision was to really turn it into a true cabaret-style performing arts organization, bringing in both local and national talent, usually musicians, vocalists, singers, in a small, intimate type of cabaret, New York cabaret style.
Yes.
And you're doing that.
We are. We're doing it, and it's so exciting because people are loving it. And that, of course, makes me happy because I love the genre anyway. And I'm also glad that it's working, you know. So other people are really liking to have this intimate type of performing and high level of performers and the training of people here to be able to keep doing it. And we're just thrilled.
And it is that's a big part of what it is. It is intimate, smaller venues, being able to sit down, and whether you have dinner or drinks, but the performers are sort of like right there.
Right.
And at this point, it has been pretty much exclusively vocalists. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yeah, we pretty much focus on the vocal. You know, once you expand to all kinds of things, it gets really crazy. But there's so many fantastic cabaret vocal performers that's kind of what we've been focusing on for our and who knows, maybe we'll expand past that once we continue to grow.
But you've been bringing in, I mean, some very well-known national and international singers over the past year and a half, and you have just announced your 2010 season that really kicks, it's just kicked off, I guess, and continues on with some wonderful concerts coming up. Let's talk about some of these.
Yeah, well, we are having our local performers tonight and tomorrow night, depending on if you're listening Friday or Saturday, tonight, and that's myself and Brenda Williams. Brenda, and we're doing a show together because it's been at least a decade since we've done a show together.
And no.
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
And yeah. And
that's so funny because so many people, you know, remember you two always
yes.
performing together
yeah.
and stuff. Okay.
And that's sort of a throwback to yeah. really honoring the past cabaret. And that's, of course, where we got our names and where we did so much of our work. And so we're getting together again years later, and we're going to do a show together with Roy Geese's nine-piece band, the Cool City Band, and we're doing this, and it's Women's History Month, so we're doing, you know, the Sirens of Song, some of the great ladies of jazz singing, backed by this nine-piece. So this one maybe isn't as intimate, this will be louder than the rest of the show.
Well, Brenda will be there, so.
The only intimate part is that we're in your face, so. So we're doing that this weekend, but then on April 9th, we have Melora Hardin, and people may not know her name, but she was Jan, the crazy girlfriend on The Office.
Very funny. Very attractive.
Very attractive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite characters on that show.
Yeah, and she was just great. But she's also been in numerous movies, and she actually has a movie that's going to be opening in April. And she is a fantastic cabaret performer. And so she's going to be, she this year is her first year to take her act kind of on the road, and she's going to be joining us on April 9th and 10th. And
so I had no idea that she was a singer at all. And now she's been in Chicago in the musical.
She's based out of Los Angeles.
In the musical Chicago.
She was also on Broadway in Chicago. She's really multi-talented, and she's also going to do a master class on the 10th. We're going to have six of our national stars will be doing master classes that are open to the public. They're always from 1 to 3 on the Saturday the stars are in. And you bring your song, and these folks that know what the heck they're doing are going to help work with you to get you to that next level of performing and kind of share their wisdom and their knowledge.
And this is something new for you, to have these master classes offered? You've had a couple in the past, but
we kicked it off last year,
a whole season of master classes now as well as the regular season. Yeah.
We kicked that off last year, and it's really amazing to see the transformation of a performer when they bring in their tune from the beginning of when they work with this star and until after. It's just amazing the amount that is learned in that short period of time, and how often do you get a chance to have a Broadway star, you know, one-on-one working with you, in this small space. So
and these are open for aspiring, high school students even, as well as adults?
Uh-huh. High school on up. We actually are working with several area high schools to make sure that the students get into those classes if they're interested, and then the public can take part in those classes as well. And you can find out a lot more on our website on thecabaret.org to sign up for those classes. As I said, six of the various performers and very diverse performers will be doing classes throughout the season. And then we're going to expand and have an open mic night, which starts March 27th, kicks off with Civic Theater's Brent Marty.
Oh, yeah. Brent will be on Art of the Matter next weekend,
Mm-hmm. And he is going to host these. A lot of times in New York, they call them an after party.
Yeah.
After the show, folks that are aspiring to do some numbers can perform backed by Brent on the piano. And they can either bring their own sheet music or look through the just loads of books that he has with him. But he also will perform, and he has a guest performer every time. Sue Hours will be on the 27th, a great cabaret performer in her own right. And to just continue to try to cultivate and be able to honor our local performers. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to do a contest this year. And then the winner of that contest will get their own show for next year's season.
Cool. Yeah.
So you've got great national acts in. You've got the opportunity for local acts to perform. You're doing the education, the master classes. And this is all taking place at the Columbia Club, right?
Right. Correct.
So for our listeners, tell us how that works. Because I know a lot of people think, oh, well, I'm not a member of the Columbia Club, mm-hmm. so how does that work?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has been a little bit tricky for folks. What the Columbia Club, their take on it is that we are their partner now, and when you come to the cabaret, you do not have to be a member, and when you do come, you are treated as if you are a member. So it's fantastic. They're just opening their doors to the patrons of the cabaret during that time.
And the room you're performing in, tell me about this, because did Hoagie Carmichael used to play there?
Yes.
That's
fantastic. In the 1920s, 1929, mm-hmm. Hoagie Carmichael played in the Crystal Terrace, which is the room that we're in now. It's located on the third floor. It's this fantastic space for those that haven't seen it. It has these huge leaded glass windows that overlook Monument Circle. And it's just really a gorgeous space. 1925 kind of Art Deco mm-hmm. supper club feeling kind of place, which is great because that's kind of the heart of cabaret as well. But he played with the Columbia Club Orchestra at that time, and he wrote some of his songs in that space. And so I do think that I heard, and I haven't verified this yet at the mm-hmm. club, that he actually got fired because he played too peppy. So I'm still trying to get someone to verify if that is really true or not. Mm. But we know he did play there for a year. And I'm actually going to do a Hoagie CD this year in honor mm-hmm. of that. And all the money will go back to the cabaret. And his piano sits in the Columbia Club on the 10th floor. This grand piano that he played on. So it's kind of cool.
So it's not the piano that you guys use, but
no.
But still, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is the space. So tell me, It is swanky. It's a swanky space. Cabaret, just by its nature, is swanky. I mean, you know, you expect, black ties and gorgeous cocktail dresses and martinis and Nick and Nora Charles and,
yes,
you know, all that. I mean, is that, or is that too formal? Or,
you know, I like that, so it's not too formal for me. But you do not have to wear a black tie or a dress, although a martini is always a good thing to have. But, you feel that way. I agree with you that it does feel a lot like Nick and Nora, which I, of course, love. But we don't want folks to feel as if that it's so swanky that they can't just on a whim decide to come out and join us, because it's really not like that either. So it really runs the gamut from business casual to, you know, cocktail attire.
Okay, but jacket and tie appropriate?
Oh, yeah, but you don't have to wear a tie.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can go there, and if you want, you can see the show and have some drinks, or there's also the option to get dinner as well?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
Yeah, there's a dinner option. They've done a special package for us. For each show, there's a $30 dinner package. So you, for $30, you get this fantastic three-course meal, and the meals change every show. So you just check out on our website or give us a call. We'll tell you what the meals are for that. And then you can just go and you can have it all in one night. You have dinner in the same room where the show's going to take place, kind of get settled in, have a great meal, have some beverages, and then the show will start after that. And they also have given the cabaret some room package deals, too, if you want to make an entire night of it. Yeah, depending on how many martinis you want to have during the show.
Now, for tickets, do you get them from the website, or can you get them at the Columbia Club, or how does that part work?
Any and about all the above. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call. Our box office number is 275-1169. You can buy tickets online at thecabaret.org, or you can stop by. We're on the fifth floor of the Columbia Club, where our box office is, and check it out.
Now, should you usually plan on getting tickets ahead of time? Or?
Well, you know, I would say yes. Because it's a small venue, it seats 120 at the most, and that's really everyone kind of really getting to know each other well at 120. So we have been experiencing sold-out shows, so it's good to kind of check us out and make sure we're not sold out and to get a ticket.
Okay. Now, I know that you've just come out with your whole listing of your season throughout the rest of the year, and some really amazing talents. Again, I know you can't pick out a favorite, of course, but a couple maybe you want to highlight as some great shows you're really looking forward to bringing into Indianapolis?
Well, I'm excited about all of them, but two of the performers actually do perform regularly at the Algonquin in New York and in Cafe Carlisle and those kinds of places. And one of those gentlemen's name is Steve Ross, and he's kind of been dubbed the Crown Prince of New York Cabaret. And
Cole Porter,
he's Cole Porter, right? Yeah. He basically is sort of the incarnation of Cole Porter, and he's going to do a show in April called A Marvelous Party, and he's going to do a tribute to Cole Porter, Noel Coward, the great men of that time, Fred Astaire, and he's very swanky in black tie. He's very cool. But then right after him is a gentleman named Darius Tahas, who is a Broadway star who's basically been in any show that features strong African-American talent. He's been a lead in. He's been in Rent and Kiss of the Spider. He was the lead in Kiss of the Spider Woman, Children of Eden, and he is just amazing. He actually is so versatile that the first half of his show is going to be kind of based off of his Broadway experiences, and then the second half is a show that he did that won a lot of awards, a tribute to Stevie Wonder. So it'll be a little bit of everything with him. And then a woman named Maud Maggart is coming in October, and she is Fiona Apple's sister. She's in her 30s, and she's like a protege of Michael Feinstein and Andrea Markovici, who is a big cabaret name. And but she's in her 30s, a young gal, very sexy, that does the Great American Songbook. You know, and so her sister's out there doing rock, and she's out there doing, the old classics.
Yeah.
She's very, very, very popular. And then one last lady that we have that just comes to mind is Christine Petty. I'm going backwards a little. She's in August. She was in Forbidden Broadway for over a decade. She is brilliant at impersonating voices and performing. So basically, this show is starring Liza Minnelli, Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand, Julie Andrews, and if you look on our website, we link.
Just
to
trying
her.
To imagine them sharing a stage.
I know, all with Christine Petty, and she has. We have on our website a link to her. She does this version of "And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going" with all these ladies singing a line of it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she starts, you know exactly who it is. And it's just, it's brilliant on many levels, but it's very funny. She is a fantastic comedian and singer. And so she's going to be more on the comedy side of the cabaret.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And Shannon, I just want to remind our listeners, too, that, again, if you're listening on Friday night or Saturday afternoon, the show Sirens of Song with Brenda Williams and Shannon Forsell is taking place. You can still go on Saturday the 27th, 8 p.m. at the Columbia Club. Go to thecabaret.org for more information.
Yes.
Great. Shannon, great to see you. Thanks for coming in. Art of the Matter.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Shannon Forsell, singer and director of the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. For more information, visit thecabaret.org. Thecabaret.org.
And you've got an intro.
I do. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
The last time we were together, you and I were both being midwives for the birth of the cool at the Jazz Kitchen.
Wow. I'm like, midwives? That was a great show.
That was
Sally
Walrab
last weekend. Yeah, birth of the cool. You know what?
Standing room only for all four shows, I heard.
I think that Sally Walrab needs to tackle some other Miles Davis albums. I would love to hear them do Sketches of Fame.
And me both.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to start a lobby to get them to do that.
No pressure or anything, boys, but when your embouchure has recovered... Well, anyway, I'll bet I run into you at something else this coming week. And here are some things we might run into each other at on our calendar that we call What'll We Do? What are you doing this week?
Well, you know, looking at on Saturday night, the 27th, it's the Indie Acoustic Cafe series continues on. Mark Butterfield runs this. You've heard him here on Art of the Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan Warner is performing. It's the first time that she's appeared at the series. And a great performer, great voice. Doors open at 6:30 and the show begins at 7:30. You can get more information at IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com and check her out at Susan Werner. That's WERNER.com. And again, the show is down at the Acoustic Cafe Series, which takes place down in Fountain Square.
I have something going on this Sunday from 2 to 3 at the Arts Garden. That's in Circle Center Mall, downtown Indianapolis. Poetry and Jazz with Monica Herzig, Carolyn Dutton, and Peter Keenly. You can park in the mall garage for just $1.50. The performance is free and open to all. And in honor of Women's History Month, they'll be including some tributes to excellent women musicians. Poetry and Jazz, Sunday, 2 to 3.
Becky's got a new car. Stephen Dietz's play, Becky's New Car, is, it's a ride of your life goofy comedy. Oh, those crazy slapstick comedies.
About the perils of middle age, as their underwriting says right here on this station.
Yeah, I know. it should be an absolute great show. It's taking place at the IRT. You can get more information at irtlive.com, and it's just opened, and it runs through April 11th, pretty much every weekend. So should be a very, very fun show.
And I'm going to tag on to that.
With Constance Macy.
With Constance Macy, that's right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tag on to that. The IRT and the Phoenix Theater are collaborating in presenting the playwright, Stephen Dietz, who will be speaking for free this coming Sunday afternoon, the 28th, at 1 o'clock at the Phoenix Theater. And Lou Harry is going to do kind of a inside the actor's studio gig with Stephen Dietz. And there'll be time for audience questions and answers. It's completely free. And there aren't that many opportunities to talk with a living playwright. So this Sunday at 1 at the Phoenix Theater, you can meet Stephen Dietz.
Well, and Stephen Dietz also has a play, Yankee Tavern, coming up soon.
He does.
He's so, all over the place.
He is all, and yes, that was by design. Janet Allen and Brian Fonseca did plan that out.
Ah, I see. And that sounds like a really, not like Becky's New Car. The Yankee Tavern is more sort of a Alfred Hitchcock type of thriller. Right?
It is. So. A guy walks into a bar and orders a beer for himself and one for his invisible companion, and it gets weirder from there. If you like conspiracy theory, you'll like Yankee Tavern.
Sounds good. Hey, the Plop Lop Show
I love that. That is one of my favorite event names.
I love the name, too. How can you, I just wanted to say it. Plop, plop. which is taking place at the Big Gallery, down Fountain Square. It's a selection of paintings, drawings, ephemeral objects, posters, all types of things, video clips, all from the archives of John Clark, the inventor of Plop, Plop. And the opening is April 2nd at 6 p.m. And it's sort of a mix of Dada and Surrealism and Fluxus and all types of fun stuff. Always fun stuff going on down there at the Big Car Gallery.
You're on a car kick here. Becky's new car, Big Car Gallery.
There you go.
I don't know what's next, but
well,
I'm eager to find
driving
it. Oh, wait. Oh. And I will steer you towards the Indiana Experience, where you can visit a garage where they work on cars in 19... Help me out here. It's been a while since I had that conversation. I think it's a 1924 garage. It's one of the great new You Are There sorts of experiences that are part of the Indiana Experience, where at the Indiana History Center. So steer your car in that direction.
Well, I just keep hearing great, great things about that that show. I can't wait
Very
to go
cool.
see it. Hey, I love getting fun submissions off of the Art of the Matter website. If you go to WFYI.org and you look under radio and local shows, you can get to Art of the Matter, and there's a place where you can submit ideas. Just found out the 27th and 28th. So this Saturday and Sunday, Hamilton Southeastern High School is hosting their first ever district-wide art show in their cafeteria, 2 to 5 both days, featuring artwork from 1st through 12th graders all through Hamilton Southeastern. Go check it out.
Very cool. I see we've gone away from the cars, which is good, because I don't know how to get there from here, except by driving my car. On Monday, the 29th at 7:30, it's another in the series of fabulous free concerts at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. This one is a chamber music evening featuring faculty members, and they'll be doing all kinds of music, a good deal of it rather modern, including music by Vila Lobos, Alexander Block, and let's see, what else? Oh, a little Elliot Carter. And, as they say, much, much more. Free Monday evening, the 29th at 7:30 at the U of I at the DeHaan Fine Arts Center.
And last thing, I've got a couple fun shows for next Friday, for the first Friday. One of them is down at the Heron Student Gallery. A great title, Don't Quit Your Day Job. It's actually featuring seniors from the Heron School of Art and Design's Art Education Department, and it's in collaboration with the Murphy Arts Center, and that should be...
I am so proud that Heron seems to be giving the kids a sense of humor and perspective along with
absolutely.
Their art education.
And then also next Friday night, the Art of Sport over at the Indiana Humanities Council. It's their first Friday pre-party featuring, you know, of course, wine and cheese. But this one, the connection is that it's also kicking off the Final Four weekend and featuring artwork on loan from the National Art Museum of Sport.
Let's see, that's basketball, right?
Yes, sure.
Really, I do know what it is. I'm just, you know, reinforcing the stereotype
right here.
Last thing I have, I'm giving you a heads up now. This event isn't until April 10th, but you might want to secure your tickets soon. It is a fundraiser for the Indianapolis Baroque Orchestra and Ensemble Voltaire, and it's called Baroque Bash. It features a wine reception, silent auction, and an 18th century dinner. How cool is that?
Very cool.
It's at the Trinity Episcopal Church Fortune Room at 5:30 on Saturday the 10th, and you can contact indiebaroque.org for more information about that fundraiser on Saturday the 10th.
Very good. So we'll see you out there, different things this weekend and next, and we'll learn more next weekend when we come back with
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Brahms German Requiem occupies a position as one of the most beloved choral works ever composed. Sharon Gamble invited the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's artistic director, Eric Stark, to tell us how the work earned that reputation how his approach to conducting it has changed through the years, and why he and the choir are performing the Brahms Requiem on their tour to China.
Remind us the context of the Requiem. How did Brahms decide to tackle such a massive work? What were the circumstances?
He was thinking about writing a Requiem for some time, and we don't know exactly the factors in his life that may or may not have precipitated the creation of the piece. But we do know that the second movement, what do we know now as the second movement, actually began its gestational period in the composer's mind as a purely orchestral piece, one of the orchestral concertos. But things also happened to him. You know, he was close friends with Robert Schumann, who passed away, and that certainly, we think, influenced his kind of being drawn to these texts from the German Bible, the Lutheran Bible, about mourning and comfort for the mourner. And so he got a few of the movements, well, four or five of them, kind of sketched out in pretty close detail, and then lost his own mother, and ultimately added what is now the fifth movement, which we think must be reflective of his thinking of his own mother. For soprano solo, who sings, "You are now sorrowful, but you will see me again. I will see you again and bring you comfort and bring you joy." And so these factors all kind of contributed to in their various ways to the creation of the seven movements that is now the Brahms Requiem. But Brahms was always thinking about these topics. You know, he was a brooding figure,
and a
little disquieted, you know, kind of personally, and we see him revisiting these topics in a number of works, especially works for chorus. A beautiful motet with choir and organ called the Geistliches Lied, the Holy Song, "Let Nothing Ever Grieve Thee." There are four major works, although they're shorter, for chorus and orchestra: Gesang der Parzen, Song of the Fates; the Schicksalslied, another kind of Song of the Fates; the Alto Rhapsody; and Nenya, which is my favorite of those four. And the Nenya kind of uses Greek mythology to talk about how we respond to loss. And he actually wrote it as a dedicatory piece for the wife of the widow of the painter Feuerbach at the time. And it's a beautiful thing. So we see him treating this topic kind of throughout his career. And it's one that obviously was important to him. And I think that infuses every note of the Brahms Requiem, and it's what makes it such a rewarding piece for singers and choral conductors to spend time working on.
I'm always reminded of Beethoven when I think of Brahms, not just because Beethoven was the shadow over Brahms' shoulder, but Brahms always strikes me as kind of a lonely figure and tromping around in the woods and saying, you know, I am alone, I'm independent, and I can't seem to find adequate company, and nobody can make coffee strong enough for me, and, you know, just all of these ways in which the universe disappoints him, and yet in this music there's this glory that somehow comes out of and yet is diametrically opposed to the life he's living.
That's true. He's a unique figure, and I think there is a dichotomy, if you will, of the kind of the human character that we know through the letters and the biographies, and the musical person that we know through the scores and the pieces that he left us. And he, you know, rightly or wrongly got kind of thrown into the mix with the Wagnerites and Liszt and all that. And I think his response was to just personally withdraw kind of from those circles of communication back and forth and bartering and maybe even name-calling to a degree. But fortunately, that didn't stop him from also just churning out this amazing output of composition that we have. And we gain insight into the facets of his being, I think, through the music that we perform.
You don't remember the first time you heard the Requiem, do you?
I do, kind of. I came to music late, and I know we've talked about that before. I was in college before I really got serious about music.
No, but you should repeat that, because we have some very young listeners who are like, I'm 22, well, I still don't know who I want to be.
You never know where you're going to end up, right?
That's right.
All my life I was, you know, I'm going to be a medical doctor. I want to, you know, go do that sort of a thing. And so I got to college and was a chemistry major and pre-med program and really enjoying the subject matter, but it was just bigger than I was, and I couldn't make it work grade-wise. I could pass the classes, but I knew that that wasn't going to pass muster trying to get into medical school, and eventually found my way to music. And then it was like, duh, why did I not know this 10 years ago? But it was a happy, fortunate turn of events that brought it to me. But anyway, I was taking, at the end of my freshman year, when I was kind of in college, kind of finally coming to music, on a whim, I took an independent study in conducting with the director of the Wabash College Men's Glee Club at the time, Stanley Malinowski. And I stood in his office, and we conducted records.
Cool.
We conducted records. Bruckner Motet, movement from the Stravinsky Symphony of Psalms, and the sixth movement of the Brahms Requiem. Never had heard it before. And I thought, wow, I really like this. Let me hear what the other movements are like. And so began to check it out. And I can remember, had it on a tape cassette and was listening to it in my car. And the first time I heard the third movement, that big D major pedal fugue, and I got to the end, and I almost had to just pull over, because it was just so overwhelming what he did, and how that, you know, experiencing that for the first time. I'm grateful that I remember that, because it's neat to keep that with me as I now preparing to conduct it for the third or fourth time, I think.
How do you keep it fresh?
Oh gosh, the problem is what paths, what new ways to interpret it not to choose. There are so many. I was talking with one of my singers last night who's been in the choir a long time, and she said, she speaks with an accent, she said, Eric, you're going much slower in the first movement. I said, well, that's true. I listened to the recording the last time I conducted it, and I wrote in new metronome marks. I want to go a little bit slower. And Brahms hated metronome marks. He put them in because his publisher insisted he do it, but he didn't abide by them, and so we can take some license there. And she said, you're getting older.
I think I know who this is by your impersonation, by the way, but we won't.
Well, I do that with great love and affection. But we talked about, you know, Shaw recorded the piece, Robert Shaw recorded the piece many, many times, and you can hear great variety in his tempi. The final recording that he made shortly before he passed is incredibly slow. Now, hopefully that doesn't mean I'm going to get hit by a bus or anything soon, because I'm going slower. But
is it a sense of savoring? Is it a sense of really mining the emotional impact by
right now? I'm just
more gently.
Perhaps I my feeling about the piece right now is, I said this to the choir at our last rehearsal. It's possible to think of the architecture of the entire seven movement work, and we should think of that because that's intentional. And there's kind of a pyramid shape palindrome, thank you. First and last movement, you know, second and sixth movement, mm-hmm. the middle movement, all of that. But I'm also aware that each of the seven movements is a journey in and of itself, a tableau, if you will. And he takes us to places both happy and sad, really in the course of every movement of the piece, and that they must exist, they must have kind of breathing space in order to really live out in their full flesh and color musically. And so perhaps that's influencing my choice of a little bit slower approach, a little more space.
And this is the year of China.
That's right.
Remind us how that came about.
Well, we've known in the choir for some time that eventually we would be looking at an international trip. It's time for us to get out there. And so we've been looking at different opportunities. We knew we wanted to take a major work on a tour like this, since we are a symphonic choir. Many people in the choir have traveled to the wonderful destinations in Western Europe already. And so there was enthusiasm for this opportunity that was presented to us to go to Beijing and to Shanghai, where we'll perform the German Requiem in the Oriental Art Center Concert Hall in Shanghai, which is a stunning hall, relatively new. And it's also the World Exposition is happening in Shanghai while we're there. 70 million visitors. The USA will have a big presence there, and part of our trip will be at the World Expo site doing an informal performance while we're there as well. And so we have a group of about 100 people going. We'll spend about a week and a half in country in China at the end of the month of June.
Sharon Gamble with Eric Stark, Artistic Director of the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir. You can hear them perform the Brahms German Requiem with soloists Chris Baldick and Angelique Zulaga, plus choir members from Butler University and the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir Festival Orchestra on Saturday, April 10th at 8 p.m. at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. The choir is making its first ever international concert tour to China in June of this year. You can find out more at indychoir.org, again, indychoir.org. Here's an excerpt of the Brahms Requiem.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. I'll get a preview of Schoolhouse Rock Live at the Civic Theater.
I'll have a look at a new event in V-Day.
And I'll find out how Wikipedia is saving public art. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.